Okay, everyone, let us begin. Welcome back. This is number three in our series on Shemot. So, the broad general introduction to today's shiur is, this is not something that happens to me every week or even every month, but one of my favorite things about Torah in general, but certainly about Tanakh study, is when you come across a story, or even not a story, it could be a halachic section, which is just so strange, right? You completely don't understand it. It seems completely bizarre. And, you know, you might see it many times over many years, and it's always just there for you as a truly strange thing. But then, at a certain point, you spend the time concentrating on it. You don't just, like, read it through quickly. You really dig deep on it. And you find the solution. You find the answer, which doesn't just say, okay, it's no longer weird. It makes it beautiful. It makes it absolutely perfect in its place. So I have got to share with you tonight one of the very, very best examples of that. Last week, we talked about the young Moshe. Moshe, the man who is obsessed with combating injustice, looking out for the weaker party, whether it's the Jew being struck by the Egyptian, the Jews fighting with one another, or the Midianite shepherdesses being abused in the desert. Wherever Moshe is, he is the person who gets involved. The passion for justice burns in his bones. But when it comes many years later to Hashem revealing himself to Moshe at the burning bush, and Hashem saying, I've seen you, I've seen what you're like, and I've heard the cry of Am Yisrael, and I want to liberate them, Moshe is much, much slower to accede to it. You would think that he'd jump at the chance, but in fact, Moshe gives all sorts of reasons why he doesn't want to do it. We shared an idea last week that what lies behind Moshe's reticence, his hesitation to take HaKadosh Baruch Hu up on his plan, is the philosophy of his father-in-law, Yitro, which he has come to admire. Yitro isn't just any old father-in-law, he's a deeply religious man. We shared with Moshe Lichtenstein's idea, my teacher's idea, that Yitro is somebody whose religious belief is one which thinks that suffering is just a part of the way the world is, and there's nothing that people can do about it, and all that a religious person can do is to sort of just withdraw from it. And it's that Moshe has to try and shed. Anyway, according to Chazal, the scene at the burning bush takes how long? What's the traditional idea, anybody?
A week,
right? For a whole week, Moshe is there at the burning bush with Hashem trying to convince him, and it takes him an extremely large amount of time. There's even Midrashim that, in fact, Moshe is punished. Normally, we associate the reason why Moshe can't go into the land of Israel with Merib Meribah, the sin of hitting the rock. But there are Midrashic traditions that actually this started much, much earlier, that it was on account of Moshe's great hesitation entering into to agree to partner with God to take Am Yisrael out of Egypt, that on account of that he was to not go into the land. Anyway, finally Hashem convinces him. Hashem has managed to, right? Now Moshe is on the way, all right, there's been a delay, but now it's going to happen, and Moshe is going to return to Mitzrayim, and it's going to be Hashem's agent there, and is going to liberate the Jewish people. And then the following story happens. Grab your chumash and turn to Shemot Peret Dalet, chapter 4. We are 20 or so verses in, Shishi in Parashat Shemot, to page 310. That would be the easiest way to say it to everyone. Everyone has got the same chumash. Okay, let's flick through briefly from the beginning of Shishi. That's Pasuk Yudchet, verse 18. Vayelech Moshe. Moshe goes, v'yashev el yetachot, no, goes to Yitro, its father-in-law, v'yom, and he says, el chana v'ashuva el achai ashev Mitzrayim, I'm going to go back to Egypt, I'm going to see my brothers there, v'erer, I'm going to see ha'odam chayim, are they still living, v'yom, Yitro l'moshe, lech l'shalom, Yitro says to Moshe, go in peace, etc., etc. Moshe takes his wife, takes his sons, right, pasuk kaf, v'yikach Moshe et ishto, v'banav, v'yakivem al hachamor, puts them on the donkey, v'yashev al tzom Mitzrayim, and returns to Egypt, and there he is. He's going on with this, exactly what is supposed to happen. Skip down to the bottom of the page. Vayehi vaderech bamalon, pasuk kaf dalet. And it was on the way at the inn. Vayifkashehu Hashem, and Hashem met him there. Vayivakesh hamito, and sought to kill him. Okay? Yeah, everyone heard that, right? Hashem tries to kill Moshe, okay? That is, I think we can all agree, not what we are expecting to read at this stage in the story, right? After having spent so long trying to convince him and finally getting him to go, Hashem tries to kill Moshe. And if you thought the story was strange until now, it's only going to get stranger. V'tikach tzipora tzor. Tzipora takes a sharp stone, v'tichrot et orlat bana, and circumcises her son, v'taga l'raglav, and touched it, seeming not quite sure what she touched, but touched it to his feet, v'tomer, and she said, ki chatan damim ata li, you are a bridegroom of blood to me. Vayerech mimenu, and he released him. Who released who? Not completely clear. Az amra, and then she said, Chatan damim lomolat, you are a bridegroom of blood to me for, or on account of the circumcision. Zeo, that's all it is. Three verses. Hashem tries to kill Moshe. Zipporah circumcises her son. She says some very strange phrases. And then, just like carries on as before. Vayomer Hashem el Aharon, Hashem says to Aaron, Lech likrat Moshe Hamidbar, go meet your brother Moshe, Vayelech Bivkshe, goes and meets him, etc., etc. And, you know, Shalom al Yisrael, as if nothing has happened. Okay? By all accounts, one of the strangest stories that there is. So, you're probably all sitting there in a haze of thinking, you know, how on earth do we begin to make sense of this bizarre story? And the way we are going to do it, if you guys want to just get chairs from over there and grab plenty of extra space here as well. The way we are going to do it, the way I always recommend for tackling any very difficult question is as follows. Rather than trying to answer the big question of what on earth is going on here, the thing to do is always to break up the big question into much smaller questions, okay? So take this three verses, only three verses, and let's just try and bullet point out what are all the things that are strange and weird in this story of Hashem trying to kill Moshe. Even the small things, what are they? Throw them at me. What have we got? Pinchas. Right, in what is a very terse story, haven't counted up the number of words, it's probably not more than 30, maybe well less. Seems an interesting detail to include that it happened to be at the Malon, the inn, the hotel. Why is that mentioned? Very good.
Encountered is a strange word to use here.
Somebody, have we got a note taker here for keeping all of the questions right? The Malon, encountered, right, to Lifgosh, okay, that's an interesting one. What else have we got? Come on, this is not you don't have to search very hard here to find strange questions.
Like, why is it the derech the malon? Like, as in, like, specifically on the way.
Okay.
In the malon.
Okay. Fine, okay. Good. Search for the most difficult, most, like, tiny nuance. What are the big questions, even? Why? Yeah, Solomon?
Why did she say, because my bride is bloodshed?
Like, what is Tzipora talking about, right? A bridegroom of blood, you are to me. And then she then seems to say something very similar in the next verse, but not the same thing. Right? What's the difference between a bridegroom of blood and a bridegroom of circumcision? Right? And one seems to be said afterwards. Megan?
So what is she touching to his feet? And is it like his feet or his son's feet?
Good. Okay. Very, very good. So Javi, I'm from the UK. I privilege people being polite and putting their hands up. So Javi's going to go last. You go.
Why does God want to kill Moshe?
Oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that one. Right, that's the that's obviously the giant elephant in the room. Is that what you were thinking of, Avi?
Yeah, the
shir. Yeah, that's the title of the shir. The incident, right? Is what it could be called. Why? That's the big question. Why does Hashem want to kill Moshe? Michelle, you had your hand up.
I kind of want to know what is it by the Kish Hamitah means. If God wanted to kill him, he could have killed him.
Oh, okay, that's also very interesting. We don't normally think that Hashem is circumscribed in his ability to do things. Daniel, you had your hand up?
Why does Tzipora react in this way?
Okay, what is Tzipora doing here? Why is she such a central figure? Very interesting, right? We don't actually have any other story other than this in which Tzipora is the central actor, right? Right? She's not a major figure, certainly compared to the Arbot. One whole very big school of questions has been left out until now. Nina?
It's just a matter of translation.
Yeah.
It's saying it was on the way in the lodging that Hashem encountered him and tried to kill him. What's it in here? Is it it or him?
It in the translation? Vayehi. Yeah, and it was on the way. It happened on the way.
Can it be that it's not Moshe?
What's not Moshe? Well, it just means this is once upon a time sort of thing, but you're onto a good question.
Yeah, okay.
But no, you're just move your question a bit further down the pasuk. How have I who's the him? Right, I've just put it out there, you know, telling all of you that it's Hashem trying to kill Moshe, right? Not necessarily. I mean, who's the v'yevakesh hamito? Him, right? No, in fact, expand that. Everyone see how there are no names in it other than Tzipora? Right? Which is very, very interesting. Gil, you had your hand up?
Yeah, what's the connection between God's supposed intention and Tzipora's action?
Okay, right. How is it that Tzipora saves the day, which is just one word I'm waiting to hear, which nobody has said?
Circumcision,
right, is seemingly the key to saving Moshe. And added to that, how does Tzipora know that? Pinchas?
What is Vayirech Mimenu? He released him. Who's releasing whom? What's the releasing?
Good. Who?
Follow-up question. It says, as Amrachah and the Nebelot, as though suddenly, because of the releasing, Tzipora's had a change of mind as to what her proper phraseology is.
That seems to be completely... You're not asking a question there. You're giving, I think, a definitely correct reading, that she seems to change the... bizarre phrase. What is this by Yerech Mimenu, Michelle?
Why didn't Moshe circumcise his son?
Very, very good, right? Critical question, right? Which nobody said until now. How is it that Moshe's sons haven't been circumcised, right? That's not what we'd expect, right? We'd think that it's something that he would do. Harley, you've been writing down very, very... intently, have you got a list of the questions for us?
Yeah, I got all
that. Go on, read them out for us.
Okay, what's the Malon that encountered the bridegroom and versus the blood versus circumcision? I have a Keisha God asking, what's that about? What's Tzipora doing? She's usually not a major figure. Who is the Hamito? No name besides for Tzipora. And why did Moshe then get circumcised before?
Okay. Thanks. All right. Very, very good. Thank you. That's excellent. All of these questions, right, are really it. So what we're going to do, if people want to take a sheet and pass on, we are going to, there's a lovely phrase in Hebrew called She'elat Mafteach, which means a key question. And I used that phrase for a long time, and I never knew I still don't know what the mafteach actually means, right? Because is it a key question in like the way in which we say like it's really key, it's really important, right? Or is it key in the sense of it opens up the door,
maybe,
right?
That's where the English phrase comes from.
Right. I guess so. Right. So I really like the image. Sometimes there is a question. There are more sheets here. Sometimes there's a question that you can pass them down. There's a question that you can ask, which is sort of like the keyhole to be able to get at the whole topic, okay? The question that we're going to ask is one which actually nobody asked in the very many questions that people put out, and that is, which son is it? Right? Moshe has two sons. Nachon? Mm-hmm. Agreed? Right? Moshe has two sons. What are their names? Gershom and Eliezer. Which one is the one who is not circumcised and who, through Tzipora's action, ends up saving Moshe's life through their circumcision? Okay? Now, here's the structure of what's going to follow. I'm going to offer two midrashic answers, and then building off of one of them, I'm going to give you the pshat. Okay? All right. Here we go. On the first page, the mainstream approach by the vast majority of the Midrashim is that the son who was circumcised, or who wasn't circumcised and was in the story, was Eliezer. Who is Eliezer? He is the younger one. Okay? Anybody? Okay. Eliezer is the son who is circumcised. And it goes a little bit like this. Okay? This is the story. In fact, let's read the Midrash. This is the Gemara in Nedarim, right? Gemara that Rashi quotes. Tanya. Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha said, Gedola Mila. How great is the mitzvah of Brit Mila? All of Moshe's very many great merits that he had, lo dulo, they did not stand in for him. Kushinitrashel min hamila, when he was negligent when it came to fulfilling the mitzvah of Brit Mila. Shneimar v'yifkashehu Hashem v'yivakesh amito, Hashem met him and tried to kill him. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha doesn't really go into details. But he's saying something pretty astonishing. Moshe nitrashel. Moshe was negligent when it came to the mitzvah of Brit Milah. He was negligent not giving his son Brit Milah. What does Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha mean? Not quite clear. Maybe we'll come back to it. What we're going to focus on is the next one. Amar Rebbe, chas v'shalom, shemoshe Rabbeinu nitrashel min hamilah. Never let it be said that Moshe was negligent when it came to the mitzvah of Brit Milah. Ela kach amar. This is what happened, right? And there's a backstory, which Rebbe doesn't really say, but this is what is going to make sense of what comes next. This was the worst possible timing, okay? Right, this can happen to anybody, right? When your professional life and your personal life, just like they are not working in tandem with one another, okay? This is what it's like. Moshe's most important professional week of his life, which is obviously being at the burning bush and Hashem giving him like a job interview and a job offer which he would be absolutely mad to turn down, happened to coincide with the end of his wife's third trimester of their second child. Just as Moshe was out with the sheep and turned aside to see the burning bush, that was just when Tzipora was going into labor, right? Absolutely amazing. Could not be worse timing, right? You know, now, I'll be thinking of this soon in a few months as well, right? You know, how far away from a wife can a husband go when she could be going into hospital at any point, right? You know, don't keep your phone on you at all times. You're going to answer it in meetings, right? I don't want you to leave town, etc., etc. Tzipora says to Moshe, oh, if you have to go out shepherding the sheep, do, but I don't want you turning aside looking at any burning bushes. But it happens, right? And Hashem, not paying attention to what's happening in Moshe's personal life, says, right, I want you to go to Egypt, right? What's Moshe to do? He's got a Brit Milah to organise, right? He's got a newborn baby boy at home. So what can he do, right? So this is now where Rebbe takes over. Emol ve'itse, if I give my son Brit Milah and then immediately take them on a journey to Egypt, sakanahi, right? It's extremely dangerous, right? I do actually have friends who made Aliyah from America to Israel when their son was 9.5 days old. But that's not recommended practice. And sorry, was 9 days old, right? And I was saying this to him, like, you know, you're crazy. Most people don't do that. Like, how could you make Aliyah with a 9-day-old son? He said, not 9 days, 9.5 days, right? Counting by the hours. Anyway, Moshe, you know, knew that this was dangerous, right? Shinet Emara quotes a verse from Bereshit Vayhi b'yom hashlishi b'chotam ka'avim, right, with regards to Shechem. On the third day, you're in great pain. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, a Malvesha, hey, if I do the Brit Milah on time and then I wait, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar Li Lashuv Mitzrayim, God told me to return to Egypt. Like, what am I to say? Like, you know, Hashem, if you don't mind, you know, we want to finish up the things, right? You know, God's given me this historic mission. I need to go back to Egypt. Sela Mipnei Man Enash Moshe. Why? So Moshe's decision then is to put off the Brit Milah, and when he gets a moment of respite, then he'll do it. Ela Mipnei Man Enash Moshe. So why is he punished? Because when he had the opportunity, he dealt first with the lodgings, right? First with the, you know, could he get a nice deal at the hotel, right? You know, could they get the new double room? Could they get it up to, you know, full board, etc.? As soon as he had the moment when he could have taken a break and done Brit Milah, rather than doing that, he seemed to spend an inordinate amount of time on sorting out the accommodation, right? This is Pinchas's point, Shene'emah, as is said, Vayihi b'derech b'malon, and it was at the malon. Meaning, answering Pinchas's question, it's not coincidental that it just happened to be at the malon. On account of the malon, that's why Hashem tried to kill him, because he should have done the Brit Milah first when he had the opportunity to. This is an interesting answer. Very interesting answer. It's pshat in the sense of it focuses on the malon, it picks out that detail. Anyone think of a real pshat reason as to why its compared son is Eliezer?
Younger.
Okay, he's younger, more than that, Avi?
Well, this reason can actually go for both. I can look at this reason either as both Gershon or Eliezer. But one reason is that earlier I already talked about the birth of Gershon, like a couple of weeks ago.
Good.
So therefore, you would assume that the new one, but then you can also say that it never actually says that there's a new son after Gershon in the Pesukim.
It does only once. Where does it say there are two sons?
I don't know.
Avi, we expect, huh? Very good, right? Daniel is on the money. Pasuk Kaf, right? To page 310. Vayikach Moshe et ishto ve'et banav. Moshe takes his wife and his sons, v'yakivem al hachamor, and puts them on the donkey. Never before have we heard that Moshe has sons. He's got one son, Gershom. And then, very shortly after, this story occurs, right?
So he doesn't have a name yet, which also makes sense.
Oh, right. Very, very, very good as well, right? That really does seem to be compelling. Megan?
Also, then Tzipora actually knows what she's doing, as opposed to, like, how would she know even do that in the first place?
Meaning she knows that it's Brit Milah time.
The oldest son, like, it'd be like, how the hell does she know to be a son of Brit
Milah? Okay.
And, like, how would she know how to even do it?
Whereas now, okay.
Now, like, she's seen it happen.
Nice, very, very nice. I did a wonderful course last semester at NYU with a professor who you should all take called Jeffrey Rubinstein, who you might have heard his name, but you probably don't know that he's actually one of the world experts in Agadata and Midrash. I'd read his books about 8 years ago, and it was great to take a graduate course with him. He always pushed us, whenever we're reading a Midrash, you've got to ask the following question. Is it answering a textual question, or is it giving a question in the text, or is it giving a darshani point? Is it trying to give a sermon, right? Is it something that is going to be said in short? So, in this case, I couldn't completely say, obviously there's a big question in the text, but I think the answer is very much like a sermon type answer. And here, I'll just very briefly share what I think it's trying to tell us, that there is a very, very big conflict for people who take on real roles of communal leadership about what is the relationship between the big community, in this case a whole people that they are serving and leading, and their immediate family environment, the Dalet Amot in which they find themselves. Right? How do you answer and fulfill your obligations in both zones? How do you be the leader of the people and also a good husband and a good father, a good mother, a good wife? How do you run those two ideas together? Right? There's a tremendous difficulty in that. And I have to say that I really think of a rabbi who I worked with, who I really think is one of the greatest community rabbis of our generation, who knows thousands of people who turn to him really for, you know, some of the most difficult points in their lives. And I spent time living with this rabbi and his family. And his children taught me the following concept, RSS. Anybody know what RSS stands for? Pinchas?
Huh?
Exactly. Michelle, I didn't know your dad was a rabbi. RSS stands for Rabbi's Son Syndrome, right? What it basically means, Rabbi's Son Syndrome, is if you're a child of somebody who gives a huge amount of love and support for thousands of people, then how do you, as somebody who isn't this person's congregant, I'm just using the rabbi idea as an example, but obviously it works in other areas as well, how do you get the love and attention when your parent is being shared with so many other people, right? So I think, I sort of feel that that's the idea that this midrash is getting at, right? That at the very moment before Moshe really assumes the mantle of leadership for the people as a whole, goes back to Mitzrayim on this terrible mission, you know, he is confronted at that very moment with the difficulty and the cost of what this is going to be for his family, right? I really, I think that's the idea under the surface, which is being got at here, right? That how terribly difficult it is to do that balancing act. That's this first midrash. The son is Eliezer. Okay, here's the second one. The son is Gershom. Like I said, the mainstream idea is that the son is Eliezer. I'm going to share another midrash. Everybody ready for some very, very strange scenario given to us by the following midrash? Mechuchta de Rebbe Yishmael, right? Over the page. Rabbi Yehoshua Omer, right, Moshe finds himself in Midian. Rabbi Yehoshua says, Eretz Nochria Haitalo Vadai, right? It certainly was a strange land to him, right? Remember, Moshe calls his son Gershom, Ki Ger Haiti Beretz Nochria. I was a stranger in a foreign land. It was a foreign land, says Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Elazar Hamodi Omer, Beretz Necharia, a land strange to God, foreign to God. Amar Moshe, said Moshe. What we're going to read now in the Midrash is basically, people know what a halachic prenup is. This is a non-halachic prenup, okay? Amar Moshe, Ho'il v'kol ha'olam avdei avodah zarah, since I find myself in the middle of this idolatrous world, ani e'avod l'misha amar v'haya olam, I'm going to serve he who spoke and created the world. Shebashash amar Moshe li'itro, at the moment that Moshe said to Yitro, Tem li tzipora bitacha li isha, give me your daughter as a wife. What's Yitro going to respond? Yitro's not just any old guy. Yitro is, as we discussed last week, who? Who is he?
Religious man.
What, has he got a specific position? Kohen Midian, right? Proud bearer of Midianite religion and culture. Now here comes this guy, out of nowhere, out from the desert, and says, hey, I'd like to marry your daughter, right? Yitro says, what, you think you can just come and take away my daughter from me? You know, from my traditions, you know, I've also got something I want to pass on to my children and my grandchildren. So we're going to make the following deal, okay? Kibel alecha davar zeh she'omer lecha. Accept this thing which I'm selling to you. V'anin onha alach li'isha, and if so, you can marry her. Amar lo mahu, Moshe says, what is it? Amar lo, ben she'ye lecha t'chila, your first son, your oldest son, Yishela Avodazara. Right? He's going to be for my religion. Avodazara literally means idolatry. Well, it doesn't mean my strange worship. He's going to be a Midianite son. Mikan ve'elech, from here onwards, meaning any children you have after the first one, L'shem Shemayim. Right? He'll be in your religion. But the first one, says Yitro, is mine. V'kibel alav. And Moshe accepts it. Lefikach, therefore, hikdim hamalach laharog et Moshe. The angel comes to kill Moshe on account of this. Miyad imid kach tziporatso v'tichrot et orla v'na. At that moment, Tzipora steps in, circumcises her oldest son, circumcises Gershom. Whew, what a strange midrash, huh? Anybody want to try and unpack what they think like the message of that midrash is, what it's sort of trying to say behind its story? So go on. Give me more precisely. What's the criticism that's being made of Moshe?
Because he accepted some conditions that did not fit his place as Moshe. But like he didn't even know who he was and his place as Moshe.
Right.
So.
Right. So I think it seems to be something along those lines. Right. That the midrash is criticizing Moshe. We spoke about this last week in not using a midrash. That there seems to have been a certain amount of, if you like, cultural assimilation on Moshe's part to Midian, right? We said, in terms of, you do the maths, Moshe spent 60 years in Midian, right? He seems to have very much come under Yitro's orbit in the way in which the Midrash presents it. Moshe himself doesn't, but one of his sons does actually, right? And for that, Moshe is punished, right? This would also explain why the Brit Milah needs to be done, right? If the Brit Milah is a sign of, who was it, Gabe, who said it? No, the Brit Milah is the sign of being Jewish. Moshe needs to repair something of his relationship to Am Yisrael, and this happens at this moment, right? Is there anything in the Pshat which would seem to support this very, very strange idea that it's Gershom, the old?
Don't that on the same pasuk?
Which pasuk?
In Perek. When Gershom's first introduced.
Okay, like, very good, yeah.
When he's first introduced, if giving a Brit Milah is so important, wouldn't have said, like, if it's so important that Moshe is about to die for it, and then Tzipor does this to the Pasuk after, wouldn't have actually said in Sukkim that Gershom was circumcised?
So you mean the fact that it's so important would mean it would have to be mentioned?
It should have been mentioned.
Interesting. I like that idea. You can't, I don't know if you can build too much of it, because what you say in Hebrew, lo ra'ita eino ra'ya, right? The fact that something isn't there doesn't necessarily serve as a proof, but I hear the idea, right? Remember, we're looking for pshat reasons as to why the son who isn't circumcised is Gershom. Malka?
In the passage before, it talks about the story, it's talking that Hashem says, like, the firstborn son is Israel, and if you don't do this, then I'll kill your firstborn son.
Firstborns are in the air. We're going to come to that.
Has the story, and says that Hashem's going to go kill them, so she took him and cut it off the foreskin of her son, as if to save the firstborn son.
But that's talking about Makkah Bechorah.
I know it's talking about Makkah Bechorah, but I'm saying it's like this idea of killing
okay.
the firstborn son that's in your head.
Firstborns are in the air. We'll come back to that. Pshat is Gershom. Why, Michelle?
Maybe also because she keeps referring to Chatan Damim, and like why she would be referring, like, why she would use like bridegroom as that if she maybe she's referring to the initial conditions of
oh remembering back to the marriage that's interesting. Pinchas
says Orlat Bina,
her son. Right, that's very nice, right? V'tichrot Tzipor Orlat Bana. It's not Banam, it's not Banor, it's Banat, her son. Okay, very good, Pinchas. That's what I wanted.
I can never refer to Eliezer.
Let's refer to it as in. It's not, I'm saying you read the Pesukim and you say, oh, it's Gershom, it's you've got the Midrash, and then the Midrash, you're right, it's working the other way around, but I'll give you two things. What are their names, the sons?
Gershom and Eliezer.
Gershom and Eliezer. Give me one very interesting difference between the two names. What are they?
Gershom,
I was a stranger in a foreign land, and Eliezer, God is my help. Come on, people, what's the interesting difference between the two?
One is a Jewish name and one is not.
Jewish, not Jewish, but Shem HaShem, right? God's name is in Eliezer's name. Gershom, there's no reference to God in there whatsoever, right? Which is a very interesting idea, Solomon.
So maybe named him Gershom, it's like he's saying, like, oh, I was a stranger in Midian, so I had to take my son, not Jewish.
Right. That really works well with the name. Very good. I'll show you just one really interesting strange thing. Everyone turn to the beginning of Parashat Yitro, right? Page 394, beginning of Perek Yudchet, chapter 18 of Shemot. Parashat Yitro is Yitro returning with his daughter and two grandchildren, right? We'll go from Pasuk Bet. Vayikach Yitro choten Moshe tzipora eshet Moshe. This is very achar shilucheha, after he had sent her away. That seems to be referring to a story after our story. Seemingly, Moshe and Tzipora split up. They come back. Vetchne vaneha, and her two sons, Asher, Shem ha'echad Gershom. The first one's name was Gershom, ki amar ger hayti be'eretz nochriya, I was a stranger in a foreign land. The Shem and the name of the, what do you expect the next word to be?
Sheni.
Shem ha'sheni. Thank you, Daniel. Every time that two sons appear in Tanakh, it's Shem ha'echad, dot, 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 Shem ha'sheni, dot, dot, dot. Uniquely, I believe, in this case, it's Shem ha'echad, dot, 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 v'shem ha'echad, dot, dot, dot. The name of the one and the name of the one. Meaning already from the start, then, zechaluk v'zechaluk. You know, they are almost like two separate brothers. One is the son of Moshe. The other one is the son of Yitro, son of Zipporah. One is an Israelite. One is a Midianite. Anyway, interesting idea. Okay, those are the two Midrashic traditions. Everybody ready for the actual answer? Right, everyone ready for the pshat? Everyone ready for this story to now make total sense? Okay.
No, I like being
okay, anyone doesn't want to can leave now. Let's turn. So back to Parashat Shemot, Perek Dalad, page 310. Malka pointed out something very, very correct. That there's an interesting story that occurs just before our story, right? Moshe says goodbye to his father-in-law. Yitro says, go in peace. Hashem says, nu, come on. Moshe goes with his wife and his sons, takes them on the donkey. And now at this point, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, belechtecha lashuv Mitzrayim, on the way back to Egypt. Re'ei, see, kol amochtim asher, samti v'yadecha. Look at all the wonders that I'm going to put in your hand. V'asitem lifnei Faro. You're going to do them in front of Pharaoh. V'amartel Paro. And you're going to say to Pharaoh, kol amah Hashem b'ni b'chori Yisrael. Israel is my firstborn. And if you don't live amar elecha, I'm telling you to send forth my children, send forth b'nei Yisrael, v'yavduni, that they may serve me, v'tayim l'shalcho, and you're going to refuse to. Hinei anochi horeget b'incha b'chorcha, therefore I can kill your firstborn. Right? This is talking about, obviously, makat b'chorot. Right? Hashem is telling Moshe, at this stage, I am going to give you makat b'chorot. Right? This is the, it's very interesting, right? There are 10 plagues, right? Hashem doesn't say any of the other plagues to Moshe, he just says the 10th plague, okay? If you want to see something, so the simplest reason is that Hashem's giving him a confidence boost, right? You know, I know you've had a lot of doubts, right? I'm giving you the atomic bomb, right? You know, this is the extent. It's not just you can turn your stick into a snake, right? You're really going to have superpowers here available. That's the simple reason. There's a very interesting pshat thing, which is that for those of us who are paying attention, I find the Makot, by the way, very difficult to read in terms of like, you know, really understanding the structure, but they normally follow the following structure, right? Hashem says to Moshe, you're going to do this, right? Moshe then says to Pharaoh, I'm going to do this unless you send my children go, let my children go. Pharaoh refuses, then Moshe enacts the plague, right? That happens with 9 out of 10 of the plagues. But with the 10th plague, with Makat B'chorot, Hashem never says to Moshe in Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11, hey, you can go and kill their firstborn. Rather, Moshe sort of seems to come with it out by himself and presents it straight to Paro. Obviously, he doesn't come with it out by himself. Rather, it's here, right? Seemingly, this is an example of Ein Mukdam or Mu'uchar. It doesn't come before or afterwards. But anyway, leaving that interesting point aside, at this stage, just before the incident at the inn, Hashem says to Moshe, you are going to be able to kill all of the Egyptian firstborn if Pharaoh refuses to let you go. This is the power that I am giving you. Okay. Yeah, but going into the details here, that seems to be taken from there and moved to here. Right, going into the details of it. Yeah, Joe. Very interesting. Good to see that everyone knows the answer. But very interesting point. But I mean, but maybe Joe, your point is really interesting. It's not just like, oh, it doesn't mean that, but it's sort of meant to make you think that, right? Because, you know, he really is going into something extremely extremely dangerous. There, I mean, who knows? Very, very, very interesting. Okay, so jump back a couple of pages, everybody. Jump back to page 308. Okay? You'll remember that Moshe gives Hashem lots of excuses as to why he can't go back to Egypt. What are the sorts of things he says?
Can't speak. Lo ishtavarim
anochi. I'm not a man of words. Right? Hashem says, I'm the one who decides who can speak, who can't speak. I'll give you words. Moshe says, how are they going to believe me? Hashem says, I'm going to give you these signs, water to blood, stick to snake. They'll believe you. Moshe says, who shall I say has sent me? Here, I am the God. Will be, etc., etc. Every single question, Hashem answers. Right? Until we get to this. Pasuk Yud Gimel, bottom of 308. After having given all of these questions, finally Moshe says as follows. Vayomer bi Adoni. Please, my master, shalachna biyad tishalach. Send them through someone else. That's not a question, right? That is just saying, I don't want to do it. I don't want to go back to Mitzrayim. I don't want... Yeah, you'll be able to make me speak. Yeah, you'll give me these amazing signs I can perform. Shalachna biyad tishalach. Please find someone else. And if Hashem has been patient until now and given an answer every time, now Hashem gets angry. Pasuk Yud Dalet v'yichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Hashem becomes angry with Moshe, and then says that Aharon is going to join you. Many people say that this is a unique instance where Hashem is angry without anything actually happening. Right? Normally, the idea is Hashem, you and I can be angry without. Without any actual manifestation of that anger, but for Hashem to be angry means that something then has to occur as a result of that. And many people say this is a unique instance where Hashem is angry and nothing actually happens. However, the Rashbam of Shmuel ben Meir, Rashi's grandson, has an extremely short comment here, which is going to throw light on everything. Bottom source on the source sheet. I'm sorry I didn't translate it. V'charon af asaroshem. Actually, God's anger did leave an impact. God's anger did do something, lefi afshat, according to the simple, correct reading, ka'amor lafaneinu, as is about to be said, v'ifgashehu Hashem v'ivakesh amito. And God encountered him, God met him, and sought to kill him. In other words, our story. Says the Rashbam, God's anger at Moshe's refusal to go does in fact have a actual manifest impact. You just have to wait a few verses for it. When they were at the Malon, at the inn, on the way, Hashem sought to kill Moshe. Why is it coming completely out of the blue, as it seems? No, says the Rashbam, it is a direct response. God's anger to Moshe not wanting to actually take upon the task of going to redeem Egypt. And now let me just do the following with you. Turn back to page 310. Everybody ready for this? This is it. Pasuk Yudchet, as we've read before, Shishi begins, Vayelech Moshe. Moshe goes, Vayashev Eliyetel Chotno, goes to say goodbye to his father-in-law. Yitro says, he says what he's going to do. Yitro says, Lech LaShalom, go in peace. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe b'Midyan. Hashem says to Moshe, Midyan, lech, go already. Shuv Mitzrayim, go back to Egypt. Vayikach Moshe et ishto. Moshe takes his wife and his sons. Vayeshev altza, etc. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Read carefully from here. Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Hashem says to Moshe, Balechtecha lashuv Mitzrayim. As you return to Egypt, Re'eh kol hamoftim asher samti v'yadecha. Look at all the wonders that I'm putting in your hands. Va'asitam lifnei faro. You will perform them in front of Pharaoh. Va'aniachazek et libo. I will harden his heart. Va'lo yishalach et ha'am. And he won't send forth the people. Va'amalta el paro. And you will say to Pharaoh, Ko'amar Hashem b'ni b'chori Yisrael. Thus does God say, Israel is my firstborn son. Gabe, Malka, I'm telling you, you are missing it now. Israel is my firstborn son. And everybody watch this now. Pasuk Kaf Gimel, the following question. Is Pasuk Kaf Gimel the continuation of Pasuk Kaf Bet, or is it the introduction to Pasuk Kaf Dalet? Va'omar Elecha, and I am saying to you, I, God, am saying to you, Moshe, Shalach et Bani, send forth my son, send forth the children of Israel, help me redeem them, v'yavdeinu, that they may serve me, v'tama'en l'shalcho, and you, Moshe, are refusing to set them free, to help liberate them. Hine, therefore, anochi horeg et bincha b'chorecha, I am going to kill your firstborn son. I, Hashem, am going to kill you, Moshe, your firstborn son. Gershom, v'yehi b'derech b'malon, and it was at the way, v'yifikshehu Hashem, v'yifikesh amito, Hashem met him, Hashem encountered him, and tried to kill him, tried to kill Gershom. Everyone see the brilliance of this? Rashbam. The Rashbam has said, because Moshe has refused to take on the leadership, shalach na biyad tishalach, send them through someone else. Therefore, that results in God's anger. This bincha, obviously you're supposed to read it both ways. This is both a reporting of what Moshe is going to say to Pharaoh. Therefore, if you refuse to send forth Israel, I'm going to kill the Egyptian firstborn. But it's also Hashem speaking to Moshe, saying, you are refusing to send forth my children. Right? Note how we've lost all the pronouns in Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Ba'omar Eilecha, it could be, and I, Moshe, say to you, Pharaoh, but it is also Ba'omar, and I, Hashem, am saying Eilecha to you, Moshe, Shalach et Bani, send forth my children, V'yadein, let me V'tama'en, Shalcho, you are refusing to do so, I'm going to kill your firstborn son, Gershom. Why am I doing it? It's so clear. Because you, Moshe, are seemingly unable to empathize with what it's like for me, Hashem, that B'ni B'chori Yisrael, my firstborn child, Israel, are suffering in Egypt, and you're not doing anything to help them out. The only way in which I can help you understand is if I put your firstborn son in mortal danger. Now you know what it's like for me. You, Moshe, know what it's like for me, Hashem, to have my firstborn son in such danger. And only once you appreciate what it's like, then will you be ready to go back to Egypt. That is why Hashem seeks to kill Gershom at that moment. There's possibly another level going on here. Not only that Moshe needs to be able to learn to identify with Hashem, but that he also needs to learn to identify with who?
Pharaoh.
With Pharaoh. Exactly. You, Moshe, need to understand the tremendous power that you're going to have. When you threaten Paro, I'm going to kill all your firstborn, that can't just be a threat that you throw out. You have to have had the exact same experience of watching your firstborn son almost die in front of you in order for you to appreciate the power of this weapon that I'm giving you. And so that, ladies and gentlemen, is the explanation of this seemingly very strange story, three verses that seem to come out of nowhere of Hashem trying to kill Moshe's son. But in fact, they do not come out of nowhere at all. Rather, they are the continuation of a theme which we've detected at the start, from the start, of Moshe being very, very hesitant to return to Egypt, and Hashem forcing him into a situation where he will be able to empathize with Israel's suffering by being put, having his own son put in exactly the same situation. Shakar, everybody. I hope you enjoy it. Yes, questions. Yigal and Nina. Then Harley.
What's the connection to the Brit Milah on the next page?
Why is it the Brit Milah?
Yeah.
Well, that's a very, very good question. Seemingly, and I think the second Midrash helps us out a lot here, seemingly the lack of Gershom's Brit Milah, because it does now mean Gershom, right, I'm going to kill your firstborn son, is very symbolic of the fact that Moshe has severed his relationship, to a certain degree at least, with Am Yisrael over these very many years in Midian. Whether you accept the Midrash's sort of strange idea that it was Gershom specifically, or whether it was the whole family, and perhaps that's Rabbi Yoshua ben Karacha's reading in the beginning of the Gemara Nedarim, Shnit Kashel, Min HaMilah, Moshe has to a certain extent become, even if he hasn't become a Midianite, Moshe has cease to identify with Am Yisrael in the way in which he should do. Therefore, the solution, the answer to the whole problem of Moshe's lack of empathy with Am Yisrael, that can make him say Shalach Nabiyat Tishalach, is the Brit Milah, which now remakes that connection to Am Yisrael. Thank you for that question. That was important. Ina?
Also, sorry, it's just a technical question, but in English it makes sense, send out my son when Hashem would be referring to Moshe, Hashem would be talking to Moshe, referring to
where exactly
everyone.
Are you?
23.
So where's the difficulty?
Send out my son, isn't it like my son or like everyone?
Well, I think that's a good proof for us. Meaning, no, actually, no, that one doesn't change. That is, regardless of the reading there, the B'ni is always B'nai Yisrael, right? Either it's Hashem saying to Moshe, send forth my children Israel, you need to take a role in liberating them, or it's Moshe saying to Pharaoh, send forth B'ni, my son. But regardless, the B'ni is Am Yisrael, and seemingly it can be in the singular. Harley, did you have a question?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yashakar, everybody. I hope you all enjoyed.